This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. As a virulent new strain of the COVID-19 virus invades the Olympic Peninsula, this week on the Compass, we talk with public health officials Dr. Allison Berry and Dr. Tom Locke about the particular danger the Delta variant presents to unvaccinated people and the unprecedented threats public health officials have faced as they try to assure the safety of the community. So now, let's go inside the Compass. I'm Steve Evans, News Director for KPTZ, and today I am talking with Drs. Allison Berry and Dr. Tom Locke, who is the recent former public health officer for Jefferson County, and now Dr. Allison Berry is public health officer for both Clallam and Jefferson counties. So welcome.
Thank you.
So we find ourselves in a, to me, somewhat surprising turn, because I think, like most people, we were really thinking and hoping that by this time this summer, things would really be going back to normal. And I know that I personally really adopted that point of view as soon as I was fully vaccinated. And in June, we went off and visited family in Southern Oregon and in New Mexico, and just generally behaved much like we did in old times. Mm-hmm. And now, suddenly, we are in the midst of, I don't know how we count the waves, but I've heard people say this is the fifth wave. Is that right? Is this the fifth wave?
I believe so, yes.
So where do we stand? I mean, I understand that this is as bad as it's gotten or close. Is that right?
Certainly, we're seeing cases rising significantly in Jefferson and statewide. I'd say overall, probably not quite as bad yet as we saw in the holiday surge late last year, at least statewide. But certainly this is some of the worst that Jefferson's ever seen. Jefferson, unfortunately, has gotten through much of the pandemic without really severe rises in infections. And we're starting to see those now. And so I think it's been a heck of a wake-up call for the community, unfortunately.
And it looks like Clallam is also doing poorly, right?
Yes. But unfortunately, in Clallam, we've done that before. So it's a little bit more familiar, I think, out there.
Right. And to that, Steve, I'd add that it wasn't just wishful thinking that we were hoping for a mild summer. We had a lot of modeling data to say that was exactly what would have happened if we had achieved our vaccination targets and we had maintained masking long enough. But unfortunately, we didn't do either of those. With the benefit of hindsight, we stopped masking too early, and we didn't even get close to our vaccine targets. And so given that, and then with the emergence of a more contagious variant, what's happening is inevitable. And it comes at a very bad time because we don't really have the hospital capacity now, even that we had in the winter. The hospitals were full before the fifth wave. Mm-hmm. And so this is going to be a real struggle for medical providers to keep up with the increased demands for hospital care.
And I would say you weren't wrong to go back to a more normal life as a fully vaccinated person. I think that was the right call. That was safe at the time. I think the challenge is too many of us remained unvaccinated. And we certainly have seen transmission rise related to that. And unfortunately, the rise of the variants from unvaccinated people and spreading through our country quite quickly because of it. And I want to echo Dr. Locke's point that, unfortunately, I think the variants were going to make this bad either way, but it got a lot worse when so many restrictions were removed all at the same time. And unfortunately, that gave the public the feeling that the pandemic was over, whether you were vaccinated or not. And that was never the intention, but that was the message people got. And we're seeing, unfortunately, the results of that.
So let's talk a little bit about variants. I was reading an article the other day that was kind of detailing the specific mutations that were involved in the Delta variant and said that some of those also were seen in other variants and some of them were like really novel with the Delta. But in the course of the article, they were talking about the Epsilon variant and various other variants that I had never even heard of. And then the question just suddenly came to me, well, how many variants have been identified so far?
Quite a few. there's a whole different grouping. So there's variants of concern that have been identified, you know, that have mutations that have led to something that makes us nervous about them. Either they're more transmissible or they're more severe. But the virus is mutating all the time. So there are always numerous mutations happening. It's just whether or not it gets bad enough that it rises to the level of concern, or whether or not it circulates enough that we've started to notice it and it's really taken hold as a dominant variant, such that we give it a name.
My prediction, we're going to run out of Greek alphabet names in the not too distant future, because these are all mutations of the spike protein. Mm-hmm. And when the spike protein mutates, most of the time it's to the disadvantage of the virus, but sometimes it allows it to be more contagious or to evade our immune system in ways. And that's what becomes the variants of concern. So the ones we're all learning about are the ones that are the more successful mutations. And we've seen this coming for months. I mean, Delta emerged in India in the spring. It's been sweeping through Britain. So we can't say we weren't warned.
And the scene in India was horrific.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of that was really strongly driven by this vaccine apartheid that we're dealing with, where, you know, wealthy countries have shocking amounts of vaccine you know, countries in the global south have nearly none. And that, unfortunately, really led to the mutations that led to Delta and will lead to more unless we deal with that inequity.
So do you estimate that it's just a matter of time before a variant comes along? I mean, if we don't get people vaccinated quickly and worldwide, that a variant mm-hmm. comes along that is capable of evading the vaccines?
I think it is certainly possible. The more we let this virus mutate, whether it's because we don't take vaccines that are available or we don't distribute them in an equitable fashion, the more mutations will happen and eventually worse and worse mutations will take hold. The only way out of this for our world as a whole is to distribute vaccines effectively and efficiently and worldwide.
I agree with that completely. And the scientific research on trying to answer your question is mixed. We know that as the variants mutate, the antibodies we produce are less effective against the new forms. But in addition to antibodies, the vaccine induces a kind of a cellular immune response called thymic lymphocytes. And they seem to be better able to deal with the variations in the virus. And a lot of people think this, that mm-hmm. that sort of backup system, you get infected, but then the white cells save your life because yeah. they're prepared for the infection.
Well, and I think along that same line, what we're seeing is these mutations are getting past natural immunity. So there, if you just got COVID but didn't get vaccinated, these mutations are making it more likely for you to get reinfected. But we're not actually seeing the same with vaccines. We're seeing more persistent immunity so far from our vaccines than from natural infection.
I have a friend who so far has still refused to take the vaccine, and he's somebody mm-hmm. that I keep sort of laboring with.
Thank you.
And one of the reasons he puts forth is he says, I am certain that I had COVID last January. And everybody's saying that I couldn't have had it in January, and it's true. I know that he was like really sick with a bad respiratory disease that went on for weeks. And it sure sounds like it might have been COVID. And so he's like saying, you know, I'm sure I've had it. I'm immune now. And I don't know. What do you have to say to him?
Yeah, I would say one key detail there is I've heard that before too. You know, I had COVID, so I'm good. Right. And we've had quite a few reinfections in Clallam County, usually with variant strains. And so I think one of the key things is we really only think that you're stably covered by that prior infection for about 90 days, maybe 120 days, where if he was infected, you know, over a year ago, year and a half ago, he's likely not immune anymore. So it's a good reason to get the vaccine, and the vaccine works well in people who have already had had COVID. They're some of the best protected people. If you got COVID and then you get the vaccine, we have good data that you are incredibly well protected. And of course, the vaccine's incredibly safe. It's incredibly effective. But I do encourage folks to, you know, talk to their friends and neighbors in a respectful fashion. And for folks who are questioning, to talk to their doctors. Get into that conversation. Share your concerns. Share what you're worried about. In my clinical practice, I actually find a lot of people change their minds, but they need to hear that conversation from people they trust and who are willing to sit with them and really hear out their concerns.
I agree with that completely. We're seeing the result of disinformation and distrust and disinterest to some degree, but I'm trying to do, you know, to my friends and people that ask my advice, I am trying to be as blunt as I possibly can. And that is, not getting vaccinated is not only a mistake, it's a horrible and dangerous mistake. And not only for your own health, but for your family, for your friends. And Delta is here. The exposure risk has never been higher than it is right now. And people need to hear that blunt truth.
You said actually a blunt truth to me on the phone when we were arranging this interview that shocked me. You just sort of quite flatly said, anybody who is not vaccinated and thinks that they can go back to their life as normal now will get the Delta variant within 3 months. You could sort of like, I was that surprised me, that kind of sense of certainty you had about that. So how do you get that?
Well, you know, the joke they make about physicians is often wrong, but seldom uncertain. So it's part of the personality type. But in this case, I don't think I'm wrong. And I say it with great regret because I don't want anyone to get this disease. But I just have to, it's my way of telling people that the risk is real and it's going to get worse.
Yeah, if you are living your life like COVID doesn't exist and you're unvaccinated, you're going to get COVID. I may not be as sure about 3 months, but you're going to get it. And a proportion of folks who get it are going to get severely ill and some are going to die, including young people. You know, we had this tragic case of a woman in her 30s who died in Clallam County. That's terrible. We've lost many young parents who now have kids who don't have parents. I think it's important to remember that your decisions have effects far beyond yourself, not just in your ability to transmit the infection, but also in the people you leave behind. It's really important that we all take this moment to get vaccinated. You don't know who you could infect, who could die, or who you could leave behind if you do.
I have a friend actually visiting right now as a house guest who had a kidney transplant 7 years ago. And he is on major immune suppressants, and he is vaccinated, but he says that the estimate is that he probably has 30% of the immunity that the rest of us enjoy. And so he has to always be considering the danger of something like being my house guest, even though I'm vaccinated, which brings me to my next question about the Delta variant. It seems the new evidence from the CDC is showing that breakthrough infections are maybe like more frequent with the Delta variant, and actually the viral load that people with breakthrough infections are high.
Yeah, a couple key things there. I think just briefly touching on your friend, I think it's an important reminder that there are many people in our community who can't mount an immune response to the vaccine, or not a significant one. So we have been talking about the COVID vaccine in a way that's not accurate, as if it's just for you. It's like a perfect 100% shield for you. And that's not how it works. It's not 100%. And it's something you do for everyone around you. There will always be people in our community who can't be fully vaccinated. And so we get vaccinated for them. It's for protection of the vulnerable in our community that we do that, especially if you're young and healthy. But as far as breakthrough, we are seeing some early evidence, you know, it's very early, that we may be seeing more breakthrough infections with the Delta variant. Now, it doesn't mean your vaccine doesn't work, but it may be slightly less effective than it was before. But we're still figuring that all out. We're still getting all that data. But we are seeing likely more breakthrough infections, and we are certainly seeing incredibly high viral loads in people who have COVID-19, who get COVID-19. We're seeing, unfortunately, pretty high viral loads in people who have been vaccinated. Now, that was all from, you know, one single case study in a somewhat unique circumstance in this, you know, large indoor party with mixed vaccinated, unvaccinated people. So we don't know yet whether or not that's generalizable to the general population, but it does raise concern.
Right. And I finally, the CDC is starting to publish or give us access to the data that they were looking at. And it's a mixed picture. There are some studies that show high viral loads in people who have so-called breakthrough infections. But there are also studies showing that it doesn't last very long, mm-hmm. that it's 3 to 6 days as opposed to 5 to 10 days for someone who is unvaccinated. And also, and very importantly, that people with these breakthrough infections, half the time they don't even have symptoms, and the other half they're mild and rarely result in serious disease. So that's a huge benefit from a vaccine.
And so I would say, you know, the risk of transmitting as a vaccinated person, you're looking at two unlikely outcomes. As a fully vaccinated person, it's unlikely that you get infected at all. And then it's even more unlikely that you pass on that infection to other people. So you're still doing a very important thing by being vaccinated. You are dramatically reducing your risk of passing this infection on to other people, but not enough to make it zero. And so when you're dealing with people who are high risk, who, you know, would respond very poorly if they got COVID-19, or if you're in a situation where the risk of exposure is very high, you know, these congregate settings indoors where windows are closed, you're having mixed vaccinated, unvaccinated people, in those settings, we recommend adding a mask as well to really increase your protection.
I'm a member of the Quaker meeting here in town, and we have gone back now to actually having meetings in person. Mm-hmm. And but our protocols are, we decided that we weren't going to require proof of vaccination for people to attend meeting, but therefore everybody must be masked. Mm-hmm. And all the doors and windows to the building are open. So it's, you know, ventilated, and we are having everybody sign in so there can be contact tracing in the event of an outbreak. Now, so those are our protocols. Any others you would suggest?
I think the only other thing that you might not have mentioned is, you know, spacing of your family groups when you're in there. But I think it is important to acknowledge we've talked a lot about these massive church outbreaks because they are really dangerous. But there are many, many churches that are not having outbreaks. And they're not because they're following the protocols that were in place. You know, Trinity Lutheran does a fantastic job with their protocols. You know, Dungeness Valley does really well. And what they do is exactly what you guys are doing. Masks are required. Windows are open. They seat family groups 6 feet apart. They are singing again, but they're doing it with masks on, and they take names so that they can do contact tracing. And we have not had any outbreaks in those spaces. So it is possible to worship safely, or, you know, relatively safely. But what happened, unfortunately, was many, many groups, including some churches, when June 30th happened, said, you know, everything's fine, and packed a bunch of people in small spaces without masks on who were unvaccinated. And that was a recipe for disaster.
Right. You had one outbreak in a church, I understand, in Clallam County, where basically everybody got it, right?
Yeah, we've had 7 total so far that we know of. And the largest attack rate we had was a worship service of 30 people. So luckily, relatively small group of people, but 28 of them got COVID-19. And that really just shows how transmissible this is.
Yeah, and this is happening all over the state, and including Jefferson County has had at least 3 church-based outbreaks that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. And exactly as Dr. Berry says, it's a recipe for disaster. If you're indoors singing without a mask on, you are, if you have that virus in your system, you are
everywhere,
really contaminating that indoor air with a lot of virus.
And we've had high mortality from that. You know, we had another outbreak where 2 of the parishioners died, where several people went into the ICU. I think it's important to remember, you know, I think we've actually had some church leaders come out really publicly to encourage following protocols and getting vaccinated as a way to take care of your community and your religious community in particular.
So that messaging has actually been pretty relentless about, like, unvaccinated people. I mean, you know, it's like every single day. I get both the New York Times and the Peninsula Daily News every day. And every day there is some story that is reinforcing the message of, you know, like, that unvaccinated people need to get vaccinated for their own safety and for the safety of society at large. So is that working? Are we seeing an uptick in, I mean, especially with the Delta variant? I mean, are in Clallam and Jefferson counties, are we seeing people responding to that and now coming out in larger numbers again? Or is it still kind of the doldrums out there?
We are seeing some uptick, I would say, in Clallam County. The rise of the Delta variant has more people nervous. And what we're often seeing, unfortunately, is a rise in the group around someone who either got very sick or died. So, you know, after we had that church outbreak where a couple people died, we saw a rise in vaccinations among people who went to that church. But, you know, we're hoping to do this without you having to lose someone you love to get vaccinated. We're not seeing a dramatic uptake here yet. That could well change. But it's also part of why we're looking at other ways to make sure that our most vulnerable are protected, which includes things like mandates for healthcare.
Well, speaking about mandates, with the new upsurge in infections, what are you looking at? I mean, you know, one of the things that Dr. Locke mentioned was his opinion that bars and restaurants really should be requiring proof of vaccination for people to come in and, you know, like sit for an hour and nurse a drink, you know, or whatever, unmasked.
I think it's good policy. You know, I think New York has really led the way with that, and we're definitely watching how that plays out. I think any business that is open to requiring vaccines to come in, especially in a place where people are going to get unmasked, is a great idea. And we are definitely looking at it as a policy option. I think the biggest question is, you know, is it workable? Is it something we can make happen? But it, from an epidemiologic perspective, it's a great idea. It's just whether or not we can do it.
It's within the power of the bars and restaurants to do that. And mm-hmm. and I've been reminded it as of Friday, 60 in Seattle took that plunge because the troubling thing to me is that, you know, if you're unvaccinated and in a restaurant or bar, you're going to spend most of your time in there unmasked.
Yeah.
And so we're just losing one of our most important control mechanisms. And but I don't foresee an immediate mandate along those ways. But I think more and more restaurants and bars will go that direction to protect their staff and to protect their clients.
Well, and I've even seen, you know, certainly looking at some of the bars that have done it in the Seattle area, they have an uptick in demand, actually. People want to go there because they feel safe. I think sometimes we forget how many people are not going to bars and restaurants right now because they don't feel safe. But if they knew everyone was vaccinated in there, they would. So I would encourage businesses to think about it. I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah, I've talked to them about it. I've reminded them what happened when we banned indoor smoking. Mm-hmm. Is they lost customers. But those customers were more than replaced with non-smokers mm-hmm. who really enjoyed going to bars and restaurants and not having to breathe other people's smoke.
Yeah.
As we talk about mandates, I am, of course, reminded of the virulent opposition mandates have raised across the country, along with, of course, the conspiracy theories that have, I was reading an article the other day about an unfortunate public health officer in Louisiana who held a public meeting to try and promote vaccines that like started off with a woman hysterically shouting about the thousands of people who had been killed by the vaccine and how there was this huge cover-up that involved people like her, this public health, you know, so public health officers, of course, have been attacked. I mean, you know, like personally threatened for their lives. A lot of health officers have resigned. And I know, Dr. Locke, you didn't resign for those reasons. But I just wonder whether you've had any personal experience of that in our neck of the woods and how thinking about that reaction to mandates affects your decision making about whether to make a mandate or not.
Yeah, that has happened locally, certainly to me. We've certainly seen it happen to health officers across the state. Anything from just, you know, whole piles of hate mail to genuine threats. And I think one disturbing aspect of that is we see far more virulent threats against female health officers and especially female health officers of color. So it unfortunately taps into all of the same intersections that cause problems in other parts of our lives. But yeah, it does happen. And I think it is affecting the health officers. Certainly we've seen people resign, but I also think it has made some health officers nervous about moving forward with mandates. You know, it comes up on our calls. And when we talk about something, people say our death threats are going to come back again if we do that. But I think it's really important for us to remember what our job is and to not let the people who would send us death threats win. It's not okay for them to start deciding policy. I firmly believe in making policy based on what is right for the people in that community, what is right based on the science, even if I know that that is going to lead to a spike in hate mail and even threats for me, because it's the right thing to do. And certainly when we signed that, even just that relatively mild recommendation to get masks, to wear masks indoors, I saw a spike in my hate mail by a lot. But it's part of the job, unfortunately. I wish it wasn't, but it's more important that we do the right thing.
Before the pandemic, did either of you ever get hate mail? I mean, it just seems like such an unlikely thing for people to send hate mail to a public health officer who, you know, my perception of public health officers is they're good people trying to do good things in the world.
You know, as someone who's done this for 34 years, I have gotten a steady stream of negative mail, not with the kind of virulence that hit, you know, in the social media era, which has just seemed to bring out the worst instincts and the least amount of restraint in people. But in public health, we're used to making tough decisions. And in fact, one thing we say amongst ourselves is when you find the position where everyone's upset with you, all sides are equally agreed, that's the sweet spot. That's when we know we're really serving the public health benefit, because we're not favoring any person over another. It's doing something purely for the sake of its public health benefit.
But I would say, yeah, it's certainly people have been upset before, but it's nothing like what we've gotten lately. You know, like, you know, when we worked on fluoride, weirdly 5G had some people pretty upset. But I would say most people didn't know what we did. We were just kind of quietly making you healthy, and most people didn't know. Certainly we've become much more public figures in the last year and a half. But yeah, the virulence is totally different. Certainly I wasn't getting serious threats before.
With Clallam and Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Allison Barry and Jefferson County Deputy Health Officer Dr. Tom Locke, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon and repeats on Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.